clear. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh!
Welcome to the MSC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jane Buster, joined by Herald and Times sports writer Graham McGarry. Graham, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having us, mate.
Well, it's going to be another depression show, so if you don't feel up for it, just switch off just now. Another dreadful game yesterday, a 1-1 draw with Livingston. Jay, we're playing with a real lack of creativity, a real lack of guile. All the things that was good about us last season doesn't appear to be there at the moment. We're going to the international break now in a pretty worrying situation and in a very poor run of form.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones where it's interesting. It just shows you how bad the performance was. The fact that, you know, you've mentioned there about how kind of negative the podcast probably will be. Certainly all the chat online, forums, social media and the pub after the game was very, very negative. But on the face of it, you know, we've taken a point against a side who have been flying at the start of this season, who last week not just beat Rangers, but were by far the better team in that game. So, you know, I think on paper, it's not a bad point. It's not a terrible point to get. But yeah, the actual game itself was dire, both in terms of a spectacle between two football teams. It was one of the worst games that I can remember for some time. And then our own performance, I just thought was just so... it's not even... You know, we were talking about it after the game yesterday. It's not even terrible in the normal sort of concept of a terrible performance. You know, you could watch a team try and maybe play a passing game, but the passes are going wayward, or try and get the ball into the box and the delivery's off. You can usually at least see what a team's trying to do. And then if it's just the performance levels are below par, then fair enough. But it just felt as though we were watching a group of guys in claret and amber simply existing on a football park. There was didn't seem to be any you know, direction, any game plan, any desire. It was just mind-numbing to watch. And really the only positive is that solitary point that we've taken from it, because other than that, there's just absolutely nothing to take from that game whatsoever.
Post-match buster, Stephen Robinson and Richard Tate both saying we stopped the rot. To be fair, I think it just continued yesterday. It was rotten. Yes, we've drawn with a side. I've made a very positive start to the season. But I think going into that game, we expected better. We expected at least a performance, a response to what was a very poor display at Kilmarnock the previous week. I think it's fair to say we didn't get that.
Yeah, you know, as you have both just said, it seems not the worst point on paper, but it is just absolutely utter shite to watch. I don't know how many times every one of our players was less than 35 yards for our goals. So even when, you know, it was a matter of hoofing the ball away, it immediately just was brought down by their centre-halves and they just came at us again. I also think that we were pretty lucky that they had an equaliser chopped off in the first half. I can't really see much wrong with that, to be honest with you. However, on that, I don't see any foul whatsoever that led to the free kick. I mean, Peter Hartley looks as if he's got his hand on the boy at worst, and then the boy goes down like he's been shot. Again, as you said, Richard Tate, Stevie Robinson, Ryan Bowman, I think, all kept saying, stop the rot. I take it they're briefed in these things before they actually go and speak to Lewis or whoever it is that does the after-match thoughts. But it was absolutely rubbish to watch. It has been rubbish to watch for weeks. And going on what Robinson said last week after Kilmarnock, how he's been too loyal to certain people, but basically looking as if he was going to change it up. Other than Biggie, who, you know, he's maybe the comments were aimed at him. There wasn't really much unexpected changes there at all. So again, it looks decent. You know, they've managed to stop the run of losses, but it certainly isn't. You know, I don't think there's anybody happy who was there, basically.
Graham, I saw your article on Saturday morning on the player ratings. If you were to rate the game, I think that was a solid 0 out of 10.
I think that's being generous, maybe, Andy. it wasn't the best game I've ever seen. But in all honesty, that's what I kind of expected before I went. It wasn't a game that I was particularly looking forward to. I was at Tynecastle and then I was at Rugby Park as well. And, you know, there's a lot more to be positive about in those games, in terms of at least during the game you could see there was flashes of good play, there was some attacking play, scored some goals, sort of folded in the face of adversity a couple of times. And I guess the positive you would take from yesterday is that when we went down to 10 men, we didn't do that. We didn't lose the game. I mean, it was close at the end with, I think it was Ricky Lamy that had one cleared off the line. But I agree with the points the guys are making about, you know, there just wasn't much to get excited about or much positive to take from the game at all. And as you say, when the guys came in after the game, you know, all the talk about was, you know, we've stopped it rot. But certainly the one word that kept jumping out for me was confidence. The guys kept talking about the lack of confidence that they've got. And I think you could see that it was quite self-evident, you know, the way the guys played. And Ryan Bowman after the game said, you know, sometimes when the ball was coming to him and his teammates, he noticed that, you know, the guys were just slashing it away anywhere. And he said, it's just a case of, after the run they were on, they just didn't want to be the one that made that mistake, you know, and they didn't want to take risks. And unfortunately, that made for a really disjointed performance. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, even guys round about in the main stand, like yesterday, were sort of laughing at each other at some of the decision making from the Motherwell players. They were just hitting it aimlessly up the park. It wasn't even as if you were saying, yeah, well, okay, they're putting a channel there for Curtis Main to chase it or Big Ryan to chase it. It was just kind of aimless humps up the park. And I think it just was a result of four very bad results in a row, particularly the fact that we'd blown three leads in a row, I think, as well. I just think confidence was so low that they just wanted to scrap and get anything from the game. I think, you know, when you listen to Stephen Robinson talking, I'm a big admirer of Stephen Robinson. But when results aren't coming, the approach that he does have and the fact that he talks about getting back to basics, things like fighting and winning the battle and all this kind of stereotypical physical chat that we seem to have been listening to for the last year about Motherwell, when the results aren't coming, that's going to be used as a stick to beat them with. And quite rightly, I think, because when the results aren't coming, as you saw yesterday, you know, it's a really, really painful watch if you're not coming away with a win to justify it.
Gee, it's maybe a bit twisted logic, but I think the sending off of Carol McHugh maybe helped Stephen Robinson in a way that maybe helped him sugarcoat the result, certainly, given that we had to play out the last 20-25 minutes with 10 men. Even then, I didn't think Livingston showed a huge desire to go in and win the game. And if we had wanted to go forward, we could have, but we just didn't seem to have really any desire to. And it was almost the confidence thing rings true. It was almost as if we expected to be hit with that late sucker punch. And if it wasn't for Liam Donnelly clearing the one off the line, we would have ended up with a 2-1 defeat, which obviously is significantly worse than a 1-1 draw. So there's almost a bit of relief in a 1-1 draw at home to Livingston, which really isn't emotions we should be feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that Livingston didn't necessarily push on to take 3 points. It's easy to kind of look at the league table at this early stage and say, oh, well, you know, they're in the top half of the table, so they should be coming to Fir Park and expecting or looking to win. That's not the way they'll be approaching games. Yes, they're in a great run, but Gary Holt's entire remit is still to keep them in the division. So, you know, them coming to Fir Park and you know, grinding out a point and going back through to the east with, you know, a 1-1, I'm sure they're delighted with that, because that keeps their momentum going. It keeps them in the right end of the table. It means that, you know, they're keeping that 10-point gap between them and ourselves. So it didn't really surprise me much that the Livy didn't kind of take the game to us. And to be honest, they weren't particularly great. I think, you know, they contributed to what was a terrible game. Essentially, Livy from what I've seen this season, are doing what Stephen Robinson kind of wants us to do and which we've not been able to do. That is, you know, that kind of back three, competing, getting in people's faces, being strong, organised, and managing to kind of grind out results and create some chances. It's that latter part that we've really struggled with. So I was actually quite disappointed when the team was announced and we lined up, because I actually felt that trying to out-Livy Livy, you know, considering they're on form and we're not, I thought would come back to haunt us. So, you know, I wasn't really surprised at the way the game panned out. It was just two teams. They weren't particularly on it. We absolutely were not on it. And it was just two teams lined up, pretty much matching up, and probably in the end, very happy with a point apiece. Because as I say, Livy are going to go up the road, you know, quite happy with that, because that kind of keeps them on a good kind of footing, and their form continues. And as we've kind of heard from what is quite clearly been, you know, a directive of the club, this soundbite, you know, stop the rot, stop the rot, stop the rot. You know, someone mentioned that Peter Hartley said it in his comments in the hospitality. It was mentioned from the players on the video on MFC TV. Stephen Robinson mentioned it a couple of times. So it's obvious that particular stop the rot soundbite is, you know, it's all these guys have been told to come away with that after the game. I don't know if the performance suggests we've stopped the rot, particularly if we're talking about it being a confidence issue. I don't really know how much confidence you can take from yesterday's game. If you can't take any, then the rot hasn't stopped. But in terms of results, then, yep, fair enough, it's a point. But yeah, it's starting to get a little bit concerning, because when you look at that performance, forget Livy, forget, you know, the international break, forget the fixtures coming up. You know, it's predominantly about what we're trying to do. What are we trying to do in the football park? And I actually have no idea what the game plan was yesterday. I have no idea what we were aspiring, you know, to, what we were looking to get from the game in terms of result. It was just a very bland, flat, almost non-existent performance. And that's a concern for me, because up until now, you know, a lot of the argument against the hysteria about Robinson has been, well, we'll be all right because, you know, you've got Dundee, you've got St Mirren, you've got Accies. But, you know, they're based on yesterday, those three sides are going to have to be really, really, really bad to finish below us this season. I'm not for a second suggesting that we'll be relegated. I still believe we'll be about ninth place. But we're getting to the stage now where we're taking comfort in the fact that, you know, Neil McCann still got his job at Dundee and St Mirren are struggling, rather than anything to do with what we're doing on the park. And that kind of speaks volumes of just how dire we currently are.
Graham, we heap a lot of praise on the media team and the media output from the club, although they're kind of taking on the role of spin doctors just now, and the buzzwords of "we go again" and "we've stopped the rot" type thing. It's quite frustrating to hear as supporters, because we're not blind. We see the performances on the park, and I think we do draw our own conclusions. I think Stephen Robinson almost made a plea in the pre-match conference prior to the Livingston game, where he expressed the need for the supporters to get behind the team. And I think they do to a certain degree. I think Motherwell fans are never backwards at coming forwards when it comes to criticism, and sometimes it can be, quite a lot of the time, it can be very much over the top. But it's hard to hear that we should be pretty satisfied with that, because we watched the 90 minutes, we watched the 90 minutes prior to it at Rugby Park, we watched what was described as an inspired performance against Hearts. It certainly didn't feel particularly inspired, and you've just been knocked out of the cup. It's kind of these sound bites that become a wee bit frustrating. I know you'll maybe have a different slant on it from a media and even a PR point of view, but as a supporter, it can be quite almost nauseating to hear stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that point of view. I mean, let me say, the guys, as you mentioned there, I think they do a fantastic job of promoting the club. But that is their remit at the end of the day, you know, and you're going to get that sort of positive spin on any result, really. I mean, even if you get cuffed, you're not going to hear about, you know, how bad we were or how bereft of confidence we were, really, from the official channels. But I can understand fully why it comes across quite patronising at times to hear, you know, listen, we stopped the rot, and that wasn't as bad, you know, when you've just sat through, let's face it, it's been weeks of kind of dross. And yesterday was just as bad as any one of those games. So after the game, you know, it can be refreshing sometimes to hear a wee bit of honesty and just hear people coming out and saying, you know, we just weren't at it. I think probably the players and the manager do understand that. I think Ryan Bowman, you'll read about him in tomorrow's papers. But the gist of that is certainly that, you know, he hopes that this can turn around their lack of confidence. However, he does recognise that, you know, that there was massive shortcomings in the performance and there's such a massive room for improvement all over the pitch. So, yeah, I mean, it's difficult at the moment if you're trying to encourage people to say, why are you coming along to watch Motherwell? There's not a lot really to sell them at the minute. And I guess the media team don't have a lot to work with in that regard. So, but I think, yeah, I mean, it did seem as if there was sort of pre-approved lines which had been fed to the players when they come out. Obviously, it's the job of guys like myself and to get beyond that and you know, question them on the real issues of what's going on in the team. But as you say, at the moment, I think I'd like to think it's just a confidence issue and things will click into place. But I do think there are deeper problems within the team. It was interesting the point Jay made there about, you know, he didn't know what Motherwell were trying to do. And I think particularly on the ball, the identity last year certainly was to try and get a lot of crosses into the box, and you know, Motherwell were piling in, you know, tens and tens of crosses per game. It didn't always work, it wasn't always the prettiest, and you know, it's a very simple tactic. But even yesterday, you're looking at that team, and not just yesterday but for the last few weeks, and I don't remember a lot of crosses getting fired into the box. I don't remember Curtis Mayne or Ryan Bowman having anything really to throw themselves at, and I don't think it's any surprise that, especially when you talk about Curtis Mayne, that his goals are drying up because there's just nothing coming in from wide areas. And the bigger Amana question is an interesting one. You know, Buster mentioned there the comments that Stevie Robinson made after the game at Killie. I think those comments were solely for Gail Biggin-Amana, because he was absolutely livid that he'd let Greg Stewart run off him for the second goal that Killie scored. It was funny that the question that got put to him was actually about Curtis Mayne missing a penalty. And it turned into this kind of rant about, well, he didn't mention individuals, but however, there's a certain midfielder that's letting us down, sort of thing. And I'm sort of torn on it because I do understand that he has to do a shift for the team. But I think with Craig Tanner being injured, if Gail Biggin-Amana isn't in the side, there's just not a lot of creativity there. You don't see anyone who's going to unlock a defence or create a chance. And it did seem as if yesterday with Andy Rose coming back in, who I think is kind of much maligned and actually does a decent job for the team, but he's never going to create you anything. And there was just too many similar types in the team yesterday for me. So I think there is things to be addressed. Maybe, you know, if he comes out and he says these things, I don't know if he's trying to protect his players or what it is. But yeah, I mean, I think there are deeper issues that need to be addressed. I don't think they'll get away much longer with ignoring them, certainly publicly, because the fans aren't daft. And as you say, you guys will be making up your own mind about what's going on behind the scenes. And I think, you know, when I was in the pub, I went round to the Club 100 after the game for a quick one after it, and I could hear guys actually talking about that, you know, that they're not stupid. You know, how can they say that's a good performance, or how can they put a positive spin on it? The simple answer is you just really can't. It was really dreadful.
Yeah, I think with Biggin-Amana as well, you take him out of the team and he's the only player that's got a bit of composure in the ball. Like, Chris Cadden looks absolutely bereft of confidence just now. The same player would have went at his man more often last season. He would have chased balls down, but he just doesn't seem to have that in his locker just now. Again, the word confidence being used, but Biggin-Amana has got that composure. He'll take an extra touch. And so many times that was needed yesterday, because while you don't get much time in Scottish football, it doesn't have to be launched up within a millisecond, just aimlessly back to the opposition player. You're eventually going to get punished for that. And although Biggin-Amana in recent weeks has been guilty of keeping the ball too long and dwelling on the ball, I still don't think he adds that wee bit of creativity, that wee bit of guile that's badly lacking just now. Buster, there's going to be obvious questions asked of the manager when things are good. He rightfully received a lot of praise. The tide is turning somewhat. It's been a hard run of fixtures and we've not got the results, or any results really, with the exception of yesterday's point. He's now got three big games coming up, St Johnston at home, followed with a trip to St Mirren, and then we host Dundee at the start of November. I asked you the same question last week. Has your opinion changed much in Robinson's position? It certainly seems to me that a week has only heightened the pressure on the manager.
I don't think that my opinion has changed, but it's, as you say, it's not done anything positive to it, and it, you know, there's other people who are very much more vocal, who, you know, the poor performances like that. And again, as I said, the result wasn't actually really too bad. You know, I mean, Livingston are going well at the moment, as we've mentioned. We've got a draw against them, which is fair enough. If that was a classic game of football, and, you know, both teams were knocking about well, you'd come away with that saying, ah, we played well, it was a decent performance, but we got a point, let's see what happens. But because it was utter shite, and it's been utter shite for weeks, you know, the people who are pretty much wanting Robinson out, you know, that's not going to soften them up any at all. So I don't honestly know what the answer is, because, as you said, Bigger Amana is the only person in that team, in my opinion, who can play a pass. And I don't mean who can unlock a defence with a pass. I mean a 5-yard pass. I don't think he's very creative. And I don't mean that in a terribly derogatory way. But, you know, as you say, he comes looking for the ball. He might pick it up 5 yards inside the opponent's half, but he's come short, took it after certain halves, and he'll knock it one way or the other, and he'll play a 5-yard pass. Whereas, if he's not in the team, it goes right over everybody's head into a channel for Curtis Main to try and header, or Ryan Bowman to run down the wing. And the two of them up front together clearly isn't working. I understand Danny Johnson didn't have the best couple of games before he was dropped, but even then, he's by far and away our best chance of a goal, in my opinion. So I honestly don't know how we change it up here. When we looked at the lineup on Saturday, and there was, you know, four centre halves essentially in the team, because Carroll McHugh, he had a bit of a shit show there on Saturday, but at centre half he's been one of, if not our best player this season. So to then move him back into his midfield role, which, by the way, I thought he was pretty reasonably well suited to. He got a lot of stick for it last year, and, you know, maybe you've seen why he was getting stick, because he could have been sent off for leaving his elbow in. I don't think it was malicious, but he clocked that boy a belter with his elbow, and then he was diving into every tackle he possibly could, and eventually he got sent off. But I don't know how or why, or no why, sorry, I don't know how we're going to change it, basically, because we're clearly not going to move from the back three, regardless of any sort of situation. So I don't know what's happening. And as you, my opinion on whether or not Robinson should be punted, essentially, is unchanged. We've got a couple of important games coming up, as you said, after the break. But if we don't start to pick up wins, you know, I think there's going to be a big swing in people's opinions.
Does anyone know whether Ryan Bowman and Curtis Main actually got on? Because as a strike pairing, they were bloody far apart the majority of the afternoon yesterday. I think there's 50 yards separating them quite a lot of the time. Just Robinson's already mentioned it was a SPFL Matters interview I watched with him. He said, that's the first time I got my favourite strike partnership together was at Tynecastle in the League Cup. He then obviously played them at Kilmarnock and started with them yesterday. Would that be a front pairing that you guys would agree with? Because for me, it just didn't seem to work.
It's not for me.
No.
I was just going to... I mean, I don't... One thing I don't quite get is that it almost seems as though it's, you know, Robinson's approach from what we've seen this season. Anyway, it's, you know, it's his strike force has to be Curtis Main plus someone else. I don't know whether it's, you know, because Curtis Main obviously came in, replaced Moult, had a good couple of months, you know, the goals in the cup semi-final against Aberdeen and stuff like that. I don't know if it's living on past glories or he's a fantastic trainer, but I don't understand the fascination. You know, we seem to be determined to go with Main and Johnson, Main and Salmon, or as we now have discovered, you know, Main and Bowman as the preferred strike force. And it just doesn't work. They're too, you know, you've hit the nail on the head there, Sparrow, with the idea that, you know, even in terms of positioning, you know, they're miles apart. I would prefer to see Bowman and Johnson up top. I think Bowman, you know, you know, perhaps not prolific, but what he does do is he drags defenders here and there. He you know, creates spaces, and you know, it was those spaces that somebody like Louis Malt absolutely thrived upon. You know, managed to get in behind, you know, make that space count. And I think Danny Johnson has shown in spells this season that he could be the kind of player that could do that. But Main isn't. So the fact that, you know, the fact that we seem to be persisting with the idea that Main has to be up front with preferably another big target man, you know, is quite concerning, because it doesn't feel, you know, if we're talking about confidence, we're talking about a team with confidence. The fact, as a fan, you want to have confidence as well. You want to go and you want to think, right, there's a chance we might get a goal here. And I would be feeling far more confident with Bowman and Johnson up front than I would be with what we're going at the moment. But, you know, that's my kind of, that's just my opinion. I don't really get the obsession with Curtis Main. There seems to be a need for him to be in the team. With whatever striker happens to be in form on that particular day, and I just don't get it. It's beyond me.
Right, I think that's Livingston done to death. Let's put a final nail in that coffin, and we'll never ever revisit that game again. I can imagine the viewing figures struggled to get into three figures yesterday in BBC Alba. I had to take to the podcast Twitter account to advise people not to go anywhere near it, and if they'd avoided the score, then make sure I let them in any way possible. It was one each, and it was bloody immense. But we've got to move on, and we move into the international break. And as the manager said, it's a chance to regroup. There will be some action at Fir Park, though, the Ironbrew Cup game against Sligo Rovers. Graham, it's generated a mixed response to Ironbrew Cup, but Stephen Craigan certainly very positive about it. This is a good opportunity for his team to play in a big stage against a side that will, they'll want to be coming and proving a point. The Irish teams, the Welsh teams and the English teams that have played so far seem to have taken it fairly seriously, and they won't want to go out to a Colts side. We tried to ban the use of the word Colts in the podcast, but they'll not want to be embarrassed here. So it should be an interesting occasion and a chance for some of these young guys to state their claim, because if they're watching the first team just now, they'll be thinking, why not? Why can't I break into this team, and why can't I improve it? Because there's plenty of signs for encouragement if you're a young guy wanting to get into the team just now.
I don't know if it's an indication of, you know, the exciting talent we've got, or the fact that how bad the actual first team is to watch at the minute, that I'm actually more enthused about this game than I have been for any other for the last few weeks. I'm actually really looking forward to it. If I can get along, I hope I can, and I think it'll be a great test for the young boys. Of course, they're going to be looking at the first team at the minute and say, well, you know, guys are struggling. We've already mentioned to death that people are bereft of confidence. And if Robbo is widening out his policy of being too loyal to some guys and dropping guys, and, you know, there might be an opportunity there. Historically, he's not been too gung-ho at chucking youngsters in, I don't think. I think he has it on occasion. I don't know if that's disheartening to young players when they see it, and maybe guys like Turnbull, when they're looking at performances like that, and they're thinking, how can I not get in this team, you know, because he is somebody who's got a bit of noose and he's got a wee bit of quality on the ball. But in terms of the game itself, it's going to be a massive test for the kids, and anything they take from it is, you know, it's just going to be a bonus. If they manage to get through or even get close to it, maybe even, you know, force a draw, what an achievement it would be. You know, just be a great experience for them. And I hope they get a good crowd there, and I think they will get a decent crowd, because I think there is genuinely, I don't know if it's any more than any other team, but I think at Motherwell I've always felt as if the fans always love when young kids come through, and it was something of a cliche, you always want to see one of your own, but I think there is a genuine desire to see young kids coming through and doing well, rather than maybe, you know, no harm to these guys, but, you know, guys you've never heard of coming up from the English leagues and populating your team. And I think there is a good crop of young talent there at Motherwell who even now could do a job for the first team.
Yeah, Jay, there's reasons to be excited about it. already saw the East Stirling game, and the team won very, very convincingly against a team with more experience, certainly. That's a positive sign. You've got guys like Barry Maguire and David Turnbull who are on the fringes and mentioned regularly by the manager. That being said, they've been afforded very few opportunities. And it's a hard one because you've got to get the balance right. And when the team's struggling, do you throw young guys in and potentially dent their confidence and put them back? But by the same token, if they're good enough, then they're old enough type of thing, and they should be knocking at the door. You've mentioned your frustration that Stephen Robinson perhaps at times has bought in players to the detriment of young players. This is an ideal opportunity for these young guys to show they are good enough, and it will be in front of a decent crowd. So I think sometimes when the reserve games are played away from Fir Park, we can just see wee snap highlights and we can't really make a proper judgment. This is a good chance for fans to get along and see these guys in the flesh and up close.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, my kind of frustrations with the whole youth setup, you know, as I've said before, it's not about just throwing young guys in. I don't, you know, I know a lot of people kind of come away from the game yesterday and you know, suddenly demand that, you know, Turnbull and Maguire should be starting, you know, after the international break. It's not quite that. I just think that, you know, we've perhaps brought in a few positions all over the park. I think we've brought in, you know, one, possibly two players too many. To sit on a bench that, you know, could be spaces used up by young players. The perfect example for me being Connor Salmon. I don't really see why we had to bring in a lone striker for Hearts to be a second striker sitting on our bench most weeks when, you know, James Scott or Jamie Semple could be doing that instead. That said, you know, it's a big game. You know, as Graham, I think, is right there. I think there is a sense of excitement for the game itself for those two reasons. Firstly, it's an actual big game for the under-20s against what will be, you know, strong opposition. It's a cup tie. It's at home. There should hopefully be a good crowd there. I think, you know, I'd heard the club were expecting about 100 odd opposition fans as well. So, you know, it could be a good day. But then, of course, there's the added fact that you're getting to go and see a Motherwell side that might, you know, be creating chances or might at least be giving you something to kind of cheer about. So it ticks both boxes. But you're right, you know, if Motherwell were to get a result on Saturday, it would be a fantastic result for them. And if there are standouts in that team, then they should be knocking down the door in terms of the first team. I know exactly what you're saying. If the confidence is as bad as it seems to be in the first team, then yeah, it is a risk if you put in a young player there and they don't have the mentality to deal with it. But on the flip side, if confidence is that bad, sometimes you maybe need to freshen it up with guys who aren't suffering for that same crisis of confidence. And if the young guys get a good result on Saturday, then their confidence will be through the roof. So I could kind of see both sides of the argument there. But, you know, as a standalone game, I think it will be a great spectacle. It will be a chance to go with a bit more excitement than perhaps we've had for many weeks. And yep, as you guys have said, hopefully there's a right good crowd for it.
And Buster, it's also an opportunity for the fans with a year's supply of Iron Brew up for grabs if you buy your ticket before the game. So I'll certainly be getting involved in that. And if we don't get a positive result, then hopefully I'll win the Iron Brew.
I didn't know that. I'm trying to cut down on my fizzy juice intake, but I'll tell you what, if they give me one, I'll drink it all they want. I don't think I'll get anything on Saturday, so if anybody's wanting to go, give me a shout. But, you know, as I say, it'll be, and I don't really have a chance to keep up with the, you know, the under-20s and the youths, and my stance on, you know, them coming through to the first team is a bit of pretty much basically like Jay's. You know, it's, I think our squad's too big. There should be a couple of these players maybe on the fringes. You know, give them a chance to push for it. But, you know, if you're a centre midfielder, you're probably sitting 7th or 8th. You're a striker, you're sitting 4th or 5th, maybe, oh, sorry, 5th or 6th. You know, so, again, it'll be good. And if any of you are going along, I'll definitely come along for the sake of it, you know.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to try and make it myself. Fingers crossed the guys can get a result. We'll discuss a few other things that, and follow up on a few things that we discussed last week. Buster, you were quite negative on the idea of the semi-finals being played at the Betfred League Cup on the same day. They've now performed a U-turn with one game being moved to Murrayfield. It's been a bit of a shit show from the start, this, hasn't it? And after making this bold plan and claiming that they had got the approval of everyone involved, that clearly wasn't the case. There was a backlash. Two of the clubs issued statements against it. Now they've moved it. Celtic have issued a statement as well. So we're just missing a Rangers statement, which is very rare, it must be said. They've not released one. So I would imagine that's still to come. They've managed to make this a laughingstock again. And regardless of what your opinion was on the scheduling of these games, to then go back and what they've planned, it just doesn't look very good, does it?
No, you know, I mean, I think they've probably got to where they should have got to originally, but the way they've went about it, as you say, makes them a bit of a laughing stock. It shows that somebody's not doing something right. Again, you know, when I heard they were looking at it, going to move it, I wasn't surprised, but I completely was just like uninterested. I thought this is so typical. You know, it's absolutely, I couldn't arrange a piss up my brewery, basically. But you know, they've got to the right decision, being, you know, the two games being on the same day, fair enough, but at completely different venues, whether that was going to be Murrayfield or wherever else. You know, fair dues, they've got there eventually, but still an absolute shit show.
Graham, it's possibly not been too much a problem for you, because it's certainly filled a few pages on a daily basis for the last 10 days or so.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I mean, Neil Doncaster, he's a real good guy for a slow news day, I'll say that. What a shambles, aye. Listen, it's just, I said there, that was the correct decision in the end, but I just don't get, like, when they came out and made the announcement initially, they clearly hadn't consulted all parties, they hadn't explored any sort of alternatives. The only concern they had was to the broadcasters and trying to get as much money as they can, basically. So it had to be handing. It was just a non-starter. It was never going to actually fucking be able to be feasible in any sort of way, shape or form. And I don't understand, you know, why it took Hearts and Aberdeen to have this stance in order for it to be shifted. The good thing about it is, I guess, is that, you know, Hearts and Aberdeen have shown that if you're willing to take a stand and you are going to, you know, not just fucking blithely accept whatever's force-fed your way, then, you know, you can affect change. And, you know, thankfully, the SPFL have backed down on it under pressure from the folk who they said they actually got the green light from. So, yeah, they got there in the end. But, you know, I'm grateful for them doing it, you know, and the way they did, because it gave me 5 days of easy copy. But, you know, It's just one shambles after the other. But it shouldn't really surprise you anymore. And I wrote about this last week. People were saying, oh, I mean, surely this time he's got to go. And there's absolutely no chance, because he's just a punching bag. That's basically his job, is to go out there and be the punching bag for the clubs. And he's very handsomely rewarded for it financially. And that's, you know, he's there to stay, unfortunately, for the foreseeable.
Jay, I think I was kind of warming to the idea of Hamden Mania, but we'll need to just wait until the WWE or a Conor McGregor match comes now. It's just a shambles, and if you are an outsider looking in, you must just question what the hell's going on. And I know that we've all got our backs up at times over the tin pot type suggestions, but this has been a pretty tin pot scenario.
That's it. That's it in a nutshell. You know, at a time, particularly at the moment, where there has been a lot of good done in terms of trying to big up Scottish football at the moment. You know, in particular, the idea that there's maybe a bit of a title race this season and stuff. You know, this idea that Scottish football's on the up and we've got a good product to sell. And then step forward, you know, the folk that run the game, as usual, just making an absolute mockery of it. And of course, if they'd actually did it properly in the first place, then everybody would have just accepted it and moved on. And what it's done is it's almost you know, shined even more of a light on the fact that we've got a big section of Scottish football fans who can't behave themselves, because, you know, it's actually, you know, magnified the idea that the plans were made and now have had to be changed. And I think that's a problem as well, because that's, you know, we all know why it can't happen at Hampden on the same day. But when you make those plans and then subsequently have to change them, it just kind of magnifies that. It makes it even more obvious to perhaps those out with Scotland who would maybe, you know, have a bit of an interest in Scottish football at some point. So yeah, it's unsurprising. We've had it with both the SPFL and SFA for absolutely years now, that even when the actual game itself is on the up, it's the mugs that run the game that regularly do it down.
We'll finish up with another brainwave that the authorities have had, and I know this one's a wee bit more subjective given that there's a voting process, but we've been advocates for Phil O'Donnell to be inducted into the Scottish Football Hall of Fame. The latest announcement following what was a positive move in inducting Julie Fleeting for her contribution to Scottish football was to follow this up by inducting Paul Gascoigne, a player that played in the country for less than 3 years. Possibly one of the most vivid memories on the park is him scoring a wonder goal against Scotland in Euro 96. I take it, Graham, that this event has been very poorly subscribed so far in terms of uptake. And we decided we were going to set up another shitstorm. This guy has got a catalogue of activity off the park that isn't particularly befitting of a Hall of Fame nomination. I heard someone compare it to O.J. Simpson in one of the phone-ins the other day. And then I was given a huge spiel about O.J. Simpson's background and everything else. Not me personally, just the whole of Scotland that was listening to it at this given point in time. This is an nonsensical move, surely. We should be... I think there's a time where if we're putting in 9 individuals a year, you maybe do begin to run out of ideas, and this whole routine of putting in a big name from Celtic and a big name from Rangers to appease both sides. I get the marketing side of that, but will Rangers fans back an SFA event? Will this just be like another one of these Paul Gascoigne on the roadshow events that Gordon Sawyer seems to enjoy? I can't see any reasons for Paul Gascoigne being inducted. And it's somewhat insulting as well that he is going to in ahead of guys like Phil O'Donnell, who contributed so much of his career to the Scottish game. Why is this happening?
The cynic in me would say it's happening precisely because of what's happening in this podcast and what's been happening ever since the announcement has been made. It's because everybody's talking about it. I think if you strip back and just disregard the man himself and you just look at his footballing achievements, there is a slight argument to be made, I guess, that he did have a great impact up here, and in the short time he was here, I get that compared to other people. Just playing devil's advocate here, you could argue that, you know, he had a massive impact. I mean, he was in sensational form when he was at Rangers, and I don't think you can deny that, but I just, when you think to yourself, you know, if you're the guy making this decision and you're thinking, you know, what's going to happen here if I, you know, decide to put Paul Gascoigne into the Hall of Fame, what's the reaction going to be like? I mean, they must have known it was going to be like this. The guy's, you know, his problems are well documented. Barely a week goes by where you don't see a video of him, you know, embarrassing himself, singing, you know, fuck the Pope or whatever at some event, you know, and I just think that Scottish football doesn't need that controversy. It doesn't need that association. And I don't understand, as you say, I don't see the reasoning behind putting in a guy who's got such a, you know, a polarising effect on people. I don't see what the actual benefit of doing it is. It just seems like another big exercise in shooting themselves in the foot, to be honest with you. And I can think of, you know, just off the top of my head, I could probably think of 20 guys that are probably more deserving of being in there. But they've obviously decided to go that way. I mean, the fact that he's not Scottish, I don't think that's an issue. The fact that he scored against Scotland, because, you know, you've got Henry Larsson in there and Brian Laudrup's in there as well. But you know, as you were saying there yourself, Andy, you know, being cynical, you would say, you mentioned those two guys, Larson and Loudrup, where do you go after that? You're looking at other kind of high-profile Rangers or Celtic players to be in there. And on the face of it, I don't know, I'm not involved in the decision-making process at all, but it just looks as if it's one of those where they've plucked a sort of Rangers legend's name out and decided to stick him in.
Jez, putting his personal troubles aside, there's obviously, he's had his demons, he's overcome some of them. It's as Graham says, there's only a day goes by or a week goes by that he's not in the headlines, not normally for positive reasons, it must be said. Do we need this? I certainly don't think so. And when we talked about the kind of polarising reaction as well, I think it's just been almost 100% negative. I've not seen many people offer up an argument as to why, apart from the obvious kind of revenue and the media attention, there's no other reason for me why Paul Gascoigne is going to be inducted into the Scottish Football Hall of Fame.
No, I agree with that. I mean, one of the kind of the points that's maybe been raised, I think I've seen very briefly on Twitter, has been the idea that, well, you know, yes, off the park, he's this and he's that, or he's got a, you know, bad reputation, bad history, but it's to do with what he's contributed on the park. That's what the Hall of Fame is, but it's not. I mean, the McRae's Battalion were you know, put into the Hall of Fame a few years back, and that's because of, you know, the story regarding the First World War and what they did in that regard. It's not to do with what they did on the park. So the idea that the Hall of Fame is somehow purely to do with what people contribute on the pitch is nonsense. You know, I don't get it. I don't understand it. It's certainly, I've got no issues with non-Scottish players being in there. I think Brian Loudrup and Henrik Larsson, you know, should definitely be in there. They're two of the best, or easily the two best players that I've seen, you know, playing in our top flight. But yeah, it's a bizarre one. I can't get my head around it. You know, whether he's on this tour and he's you know, managed to convince somebody that will give him a bit of exposure. I just don't get it. It's a pointless inclusion, and whoever came up with it must have known that, you know, that there would be an overwhelmingly negative reaction to it. I think that, yes, the Hall of Fame should boast the kind of folk who have, you know, bettered their game, whether it's, you know, Scotland internationals who have won loads of caps or you know, taking the national team forward, whether it's guys like Larson and Loudrup who have, you know, dazzled us with their abilities on the park, that's fine. But I think there has to be a line drawn, even when it's taking into account someone's character or what they've been like off the park. I mean, let's be honest, if you ask any Scottish football fan, to think off the top of their head, the first image they think of Paul Gascoigne in a Rangers shirt, probably one of the very first will be the imaginary flute, and that's really not the kind of person I think that should be in the Hall of Fame.
Can I also just say as well, he admitted to battering his wife. The guy's a fucking scumbag. Yeah, why is he involved in a Hall of Fame? You know, I'm sure if you're in any other Hall of Fame and you do something pretty scummy, you're going to get removed from that Hall of Fame. This guy, again, I know he's had his personal problems, which is a right shame and stuff like that, but he battered his fucking wife. Get him to fuck.
You can almost envisage the SPFL and the SFA sitting there on Friday morning going, right, we've sorted out the semi-finals now. It's a bit quiet in here. So someone, they put into the pot of ideas the most controversial, stupid plans they could possibly come up with, and this one obviously won the day. It's bonkers. Like, I've read through the first 100 replies on Twitter while Jay was talking there, and there is not one positive. And I know that the negative voice normally wins on social media, but come on, man, this is a dreadful plan. And I think it actually undermines the others that will go in alongside him this year as well, because this will be the Paul Gascoigne show.
Do you know what, as well, I honestly don't understand his footballing reasons for being in the Scottish Hall of Fame. He was at Rangers for 2 3/4 years. What the fuck? Honest to God, man. It's a lot of fucking shame.
Well, I tell you what, that's a great
point.
That's certainly cheered me up a bit after all the chat about Livingston, it must be said. That was good stuff, Buster. Thank you very much. That's definitely going to be this week's preview. Jay, Buster, thank you very much for your time tonight.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Graham, it's much appreciated, mate. It's been a while since we had you on and very much enjoyed having you.
No problem, mate. Thanks a lot for having me. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, Ben.
You've been listening to the MSC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye. I cannot say.